You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, or join the Facebook discussion groups, www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes, and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter, at Fantasy Benefits, for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me for another Prospect Minute is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm really good, man, and I'm really, really pumped to talk about a team that's made up their mind and they've went from a bottom five system to a top five system in a month. So that's impressive.
Yeah, this one will not be a minute. Like,
you know, This is
going to be a prospect half hour or so, because, like you said, this organization has completely turned around their minor league program and systems, and that is the Chicago White Sox. So we are going to talk about a lot of guys that are close, and a lot of guys with huge ceilings. So I will play the role of the devil's advocate and the negative Nelly. And you will play the role of the guy who loves a lot of these guys.
I've been told I'm too negative at times too. So if I'm negative, you can also play the other role. So.
Yeah, yeah. Let's jump right in. But before we do, I want to remind everybody you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB. You can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. The top tier of this system, at least, are guys they've acquired recently. The former number one prospect in baseball, Yoan Moncada, he's your number two guy, I believe.
Yep, that's correct.
Is he going to make the majors early this year? We all expect him to be in the majors at some point. Some people believe he could be there out of the gate. Others may be a little bit more tentative. What are your thoughts on Moncada for this season and then going forward?
This season, I don't expect much. I wouldn't even touch him in redraft leagues. And I know that's weird to say because he debuted last year, but it was in September. And if it wasn't in September, it was in the last few days of August. So what is that? A week? So as far as the White Sox are concerned, because there's a little known caveat, though, when people play in September, that doesn't count towards your arbitration service time. It gives you major league service time towards your pension and all that stuff, but it doesn't count towards your service time. So as far as the White Sox are concerned, Yoan Moncada has got zero service time. So they have no reason to bring him up early because obviously with their actions, they are not going to contend this year. I do think they'll be better than people think, just because talent always rises to the top, whether it's raw and molded. They'll be a tough team to play in the second half of the year. If they call up some of these arms, because they do move arms faster than hitters. We'll get to that. But Moncada, I don't expect much. If anything, it'll be September call-up. It's a little bit different with him at second base. So if they trade Todd Frazier, I think that improves the odds he comes up earlier because now you're filling second and third. And while I think Moncada is still I'd rather him be at third, to be honest. I think his value takes a slight hit being at second base. Well, okay, let me reword that. A guy like him, his value doesn't take a hit because he's so he's good no matter what. But I think I would rather have him at third base because second base is so deep. You know what I mean?
Well, and third base is pretty deep, too.
It is, but I guess I'm a weirdo. I like when I draft, I like getting my speed from the middle infield. And okay. That's where I get my stolen bases. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, I always just kind of pencil that in. And I mean, and when he comes up, if say, for example, he was to play a full year this year, which won't happen. So let me repeat that. It will not happen. If he was, though, I mean, I would project him to hit 230, 240, OBP over 310, 320 range, which is strong for that batting average. And I think he could steal 30 bags. And the home runs would probably be 8 to 10 if he come up now, which he won't. But, I mean, I think you're looking at a guy – I think when he first comes up, before he fills out and before he gets bigger, say next year he gets – say 2018 he's getting majority of the playing time at second base, which he probably should be. I could see him stealing 30 to 40 bags that year, hitting 10 to 15 homers, strong averages. And then I think the homers will go up as he gets – as you know, in the next three, four years, and the steals will be 8 to 10 in 4 years, but the homers will be 30 to 40. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's gonna follow that career path, and he's a switch hitter with plus power. He's got plus speed, plus batting eye. He's got a plus hit tool. His major league trial this year, 4 for 19 with 12 strikeouts. That does scare me a little bit. And I mean a real little bit, only because the contact rate showed steady decreases as he went up every level. So that's something to monitor. I think that's the goal for him this year. Even if you have to sacrifice a little bit of that batting average just to put the ball in play more, I think that's a win. You know what I mean? I think that's a development win for him. He's a guy, do not pay attention to the stat line at all this year in the minor leagues. Just trust the skills. And he's my number two guy. He has the best upside of any prospect in baseball. But I think Benintendi is way safer, and I think if you're going to invest in a number one guy, that has to be the guy. I mean, any thoughts on that?
I mean, if you're going to invest in a guy for this year, I'm investing in Benintendi.
Oh, 100%.
And if you're that's also even, a factor. Even long term, I think I'm investing Benintendi because
– I agree. I agree.
I think there's huge boon in Moncada, but like you said, I think there's some bust that people aren't really willing to admit.
There is. I wouldn't bet on the bus. I really, truly believe he's going to be a superstar, but yes.
And I do, too. I think at some point we're talking about a guy who is a first-rounder in fantasy. Yes. I believe in him, but like I know Benintendi is a second, third-rounder, you know, in the next year or two. Mm-hmm. And at worst, I feel like he's a top 120 pick.
Agreed.
At worst, Yoan Moncada is Brandon Wood.
Yeah, and you're right. And the thing that scares me a little bit with Moncada, and maybe it shouldn't, maybe I'm dumb, but he's ripped. He's jacked. I'm worried about getting stiff and getting muscle problems. You know what I mean? Tissue problems. Muscle tear here and there, muscle strain, because he's so big. You know what I mean? And maybe I shouldn't worry about that, but that's just the little things that a prospector like myself just runs through my head. I don't know.
No, I don't think I would worry about that. To me, it's the contact. Like, you know, oh, and definitely. I know we're in an era where people care less about contact as long as you're putting the ball over the fence. But that's not what I want to teach a minor leaguer. Like, I don't want my prospects, you know, coming up through the system thinking that. Well, as long as I hit it over the fence, it's okay.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's going to be a well-rounded player, though, so he's going to be a plus defender at second eventually. He's got the arm to play anywhere in baseball. So, and it's worth noting that the Red Sox, when they signed him, let him pick where he wanted to play. They gave him options, and he said second base. So he's back there now with the White Sox. So I think that's a good thing.
Okay.
I guess the next guy on the list?
Yeah, let's talk about Lucas Giolito and then some of the other pitchers, because they got some pitchers high up in the system as well.
Definitely. I think Giolito is more likely to pitch in appear in the major leagues than Moncada is this year. I'm a smidgen down on Giolito if you count having him as your fifth overall prospect and then dropping him to like 10 to 12. I mean, that's down, but how down is that? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I still believe in the ceiling. I think he's probably not a number one, but he's at the very worst a number two for me. realistically, I mean, obviously the really worst scenario is he gets hurt and doesn't pitch, but realistic scenario, I think very, very worst for fantasy purposes. He's a number three starter with high strikeouts. But I think he's better than that. I think he will be. The fastball kind of went backwards. The K rate was a little lower. The Nationals were messing with his mechanics. He got straightened out as the middle of the season because they let him go back to his old ways, and it worked out better for him. Fastball sometimes comes in straight. Excellent hammer curveball. The changeup's developing. I still think he's great. And I don't really like the smear campaign that seemed to happen after he got traded. Everyone was, you know, defending the Nationals' trades. And okay, fine, I get it. They think their windows might be closing, and Giolito doesn't help them a lot this year, so they made the move. But I think it's very short-sighted. And in if Harper walks in 2018, that team could look very ugly pretty fast.
Yeah, and I mean, I defend the trade from the national standpoint in terms of they're trying to win now, and I get that. I defend it from the White Sox side, too, because I still think this kid is an ace. I still think this kid has top-of-the-rotation stuff, top-of-the-rotation upside. I understand he looked awful in his Major League debut. You know, he was 21 years old. Cut him some slack. You know, I think this is a kid that will prove people wrong as long as he stays healthy. I would try to buy any shares I could of him at a reduced rate. I still think he is a top five prospect in baseball.
Yeah, from a fantasy angle, I'm a little lower than that, but it's not much. So I'm right there with you. I don't like the hate all of a sudden that's out there for my boy Lucas, but it's okay. It's someone else's loss, and it'll be our gain. So
Let's move over to Michael Kopech, another guy that lost some shine because of a PED suspension, off the field issues.
Punched his teammate, broke his hand.
Yeah, but it was a huge part of that deal going from Boston to the White Sox. And has some notable upside. So let's talk about Michael Kopech.
Yeah, I don't know if you listened to the podcast it was me and Justin and our friend of the podcast, Ralph Lifshitz from over at Razzball.
You, Mike, and Ralph, yeah.
Yeah, and Mike, and we broke down the Red Sox trades with the White Sox here, and particularly the White Sox trades. And he went in depth about Michael Kopech's, like, his Twitter persona, and I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah, I'm following him on Twitter now, yeah.
Hashtag Thor the sequel, which he doesn't have up anymore, which is disappointing, but that's okay. He doesn't need to have that up because, I mean, you don't need that. But it's funny, though, after the trade, it went down. So I think that might have been something the White Sox might have said something about, which is interesting. But anyways, let's get the first thing off the bat first. He did not throw 105.
How dare you say that?
We've been watching baseball forever, and I'm not going to think a minor leaguer who doesn't get the nutrition that he should, and the minor leaguers eat shitty food, and major league pitchers who are making the money and eating literally whatever they want, like Chapman, and Chapman doesn't hit 105. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a big believer in, and that's a different rant for a different day, is why minor leaguers don't have personal chefs that follow all the, why major league teams don't pay for personal chefs with their minor league clubs. But that's something I'll never understand, because that's a long-term investment that they're making in these kids. But that's a different issue. The biggest issue that's going to stop Kopech, number one, first and foremost, is something he can control, which is his makeup concerns. As you can see, the Red Sox had Kopech, and they drafted Jay Groom, who had makeup concerns. I'm not a big makeup guy when these guys are this young. I know Kopech's at the age now where he needs to start getting into the right direction, but it's never been it's been a problem for him in the fact that he is a little bit of a hothead. Obviously, with punching his teammate and breaking a hand, that's not a good thing. And not a smart thing to be punching people with your right hand either, considering that's going to make you hundreds of millions of dollars down the line, but that's a different issue. But the stuff is nasty. I watched him in the Arizona Fall League, limited innings. He was working on the changeup. It was obvious. Like, he was throwing it a lot, but he was throwing it to lefties and righties, and it looked like a good pitch. And that's the key here. He's got the monster off-speed pitch to go with the big fastball. The command is good now, as long as it doesn't alter. And you got to remember, he's going to Don Cooper now. Same for Giolito. Don Cooper will get his hands on them, and Nick Hassler and all that whole organization is really, really phenomenal developing pitching. That's an underrated factor of this trade. The White Sox do well in that department, and they're getting two guys that don't really need much molding, just keep them going down the right path. And I'm extremely high on Kopech. I think the long hair is the new thing for pitchers. He's got all that. The above-average slider destroys people. The changeup is underrated. Like I said, it's getting better. He's a future number one, and I think his ceiling is higher than Giolito's, but I think he's less likely to reach it, if that makes sense.
All right, I'm going to give you a sentence off of another blog. I'm going to hide the name. You tell me the player, okay?
Okay.
So play a little game. Blank was involved in a bar fight in 2005 where he would break his pitching hand, raising concerns about his durability and his makeup. Do you know what player I'm speaking of?
I do not.
We're talking about Cole Hamels. This came out in...
I did hear that. Okay.
Yeah. So this came out in like 2006. It's from philliesnation.com. This was, you know, part of his makeup. I do not care about makeup concerns like this with 19, 18-year-olds.
Trust me,
it just
I'm
doesn't make sense to... I mean, these are kids, you know? Yep. Trust me, if people were going to judge my entire life and career based on the things I was doing at 18, 19 years old, we would be having a different conversation, and it probably would involve, you know, bars or behind glass. So
I'm not as quite with you, but I am with you. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, I mean... You know, and I don't want to say he's going to go off and have a Cole Hamels type career, but
to be honest with you, if he had a Cole Hamels type career, I'd be a little disappointed. I think his ceiling's better than that. That sounds crazy to say, but I mean,
don't let these are things that we can't quantify. So don't let the things that we can't quantify dissuade you from taking a player or acquiring a player. You know what? You should play those up to your league mates and attempt to acquire these kind of guys.
Yep. And the other issue, though, that I do think it's kind of been a little bit proven, I guess, that high velocity is a bit bigger injury risk. And obviously the high velocity being an injury risk is a thing here. But I like the delivery. I think the delivery doesn't have much stress on the arm, any extra stress, because obviously pitching does, but any extra stress on the arm. So, I mean, you can't worry about that, because if you worry about that, then you're going to be worried about a lot of different pitchers too. So.
Mm-hmm. Let's move over to Ronaldo Lopez, because this is the guy I think we're going to disagree on quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm the high man here.
Yeah, so talk about what you think of Ronaldo Lopez, and then I'll tell you what I've seen.
Fastball, big fastball, gets it up to 98. I believe he sits around 94, 95. Above average curveball. It's like a curveball slider hybrid thing, and mostly it's a curveball. I take that back. It's a curveball. It's above average. Two things, the changeup needs to develop better, which I think it will. Don Cooper, really good with changeups. Carlos Rodon this year made strides with the changeup. Mark Burley was under Cooper for a long time with the changeup. I know it's a stretch to quantify with those two guys, but those pitchers grew and got improved because of Don Cooper. And I think that's what we're looking for here. And I think this little extra organization change is enough to maybe push, maybe something clicks. The inconsistent off-speed stuff and the concerns about the mechanics, durability. Ronaldo Lopez used to be a real small, skinny guy. He's not a small, skinny guy anymore. He's a bigger, I guess I'll call him bigger boned guy. He has a big trunk, and he'll get velocity, and he'll stay durable. But as you grow, your delivery is going to change. Your tempo changes. It's natural. And I think recent growth spurts will make you change it. It will alter your mechanics. It has to. He's listed at 185. I would say he's 230, 220. You know what I mean? And that's a big difference. So I'm not holding that against him. But I'm high on him. I think he's a potential number two starter in fantasy circles. I think he's a mid-rotation floor. A lot of people say that he's a bullpen guy, which make him a closer, which is still really good for fantasy value. So either way, he's, in my opinion, he's either a number two starter or a closer, and there's nothing wrong with either one of those.
Yeah, I think he is a bullpen arm, you know, and he could be, like you said, a closer, an elite bullpen arm, and so therefore he has value in fantasy. I got to see him up close and personal when the Nationals came out and played in San Francisco. I was at that game. I watched him a number of other times throughout the season, and I think he has kind of poor command.
He does.
And I think he has a I think he's going to have hard time turning over the lineup over and over again.
That's so where the changeup development comes in. Yep, yeah. You're absolutely right. He's so, a third pitch.
To me, I mean, if he can develop a third pitch, then maybe there is some potential to be a middle of the rotation starter. He's got good stuff. So, I mean, I think, if for some reason he doesn't work out as a starter, I think he could be the kind of, you know, elite inning closer kind of guy.
Yep.
But from what I've seen so far, I think his destination will be in the bullpen. And so I'm not as interested in, at least right now, in fantasy.
And that's fair. And I want to go on a little mini tangent here as well. Like, a lot of people look at electric arms. Like, I read a Baseball Prospectus piece earlier this winter. They were breaking down the Nationals prospects, and Giolito was still there. And the author of the post wrote that Giolito was a bullpen arm. And I'm like, okay, you know, everyone's got their own opinions of things. But obviously, an ace, fantasy ace, is on its own level of value. But, like, isn't an elite closer and a fantasy number two starter worth around the same?
An
elite high strikeout closer, like Aroldis Chapman, is going around where you would take your second starter, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. I just don't know if I'd necessarily consider even him an elite guy, you know, a guy who I would project to be an elite closer.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just going on a rant
No, I understand what you're saying.
There's still value there. Like,
there's still value, but I mean, from a real baseball perspective,
yes,
you know, 60 to 70 innings versus 200 innings, there's a huge difference in value. Yeah. And even, I mean, unless you're going to be a Chapman or a Jansen or a Britton, you know, it's really hard to say that, yeah, that's even close because, I mean, let's just be honest. There are three really elite closers in baseball.
Yep.
There are 20 elite pitchers, starting pitchers in fantasy baseball.
Agreed.
So, I mean, there's already, you know, a difference in what is attainable and what isn't.
Agree with that.
Let's move on to Carson Fulmer because we're already running at about like 20 minutes and we talked about four guys. So Carson Fulmer, is he going to stick in the rotation?
Earlier this offseason, I would have said yes, but now they've added Kopech, they've added Lopez, and they've added Giolito to the depth. So I think ultimately no. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because, I think he's still going to carry value in that high leverage bullpen role. The delivery is not susceptible to command, I'll just say like that, and I think that's going to be the problem. The fastball dropped a little bit in velocity this year, which is also a problem. He does strike out a batter an inning, which is good. The stuff is like top of the scale. Fastball mid-90s with good movement. The secondary pitches, he throws an above-average changeup, plus curveball, and he has a little cutter to get lefties out. So I think he's a mid-rotation starter if he stays in the rotation, but I think these new acquisitions are going to push him to a potentially elite bullpen kind of guy. But there's a couple other – well, there's one other potential elite bullpen guy. So the closer spot in this organization is going to be up for grabs between a couple guys, and I think Fulmer's going to be in the mix for that job.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty down to Fulmer too. I just traded him and Jonathan Scope to acquire Lance McCullers in a dynasty league.
I like that.
So, I mean – yeah, I think he's ending up in the bullpen, especially, like you said, with the guys they now have slated for the rotation.
They also have Carlos Rodon, like, not going anywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's not looking good. So, let's go ahead, let's talk about other guys that are close to the major leagues that you can invest in fantasy.
He's a straight relief prospect, so I don't know how much this excites you, but Zach Birdie, he was a first-round pick, believe it or not, by this organization out of Louisville. Pure gas, 96 to 100 with the fastball. I've seen him pitch. It's higher than that. Consistently sits, I would say, 97, 98. plus slider. The changeup is decent, but you don't really need a third pitch in his role. Perfect guy for the bullpen. Not much else to really add. His command is an issue, but I think that tightens up. I think he comes up this year, but he's also probably won't be a closer this year. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's an interesting guy for this year. There is also Michael Yanoa. It's a good bullpen arm, middle inning arm. Got some stuff. Dylan Covey is a Rule 5 pick. I liked him when he was a first-round draft pick by the Brewers and didn't sign. And he went back in the draft to the A's, got Pep in the fourth round. He's got to be on the roster. He's a Rule 5 guy, like I said. He gets ground balls. Probably a future back-end starter if he sticks. Charlie Tilson is kind of interesting to me. He's a local boy for me. Cardinals drafted him in 2013. They traded him straight up for Zach, or 2011, I'm sorry. He had a litany of injuries, and including last year. He was traded straight up for Zach Duke. He's a guy that I believe can steal 25 bases in the majors if he gets the opportunity. But he had suffered a pretty terrible hamstring injury. He's making his major league debut last year, and he got hurt for the season, so that kind of sucked. But he controls the strike zone relatively well. The power will never be a big part of his game. The arm isn't great. Plus speed, though, plus defensive player. Realistically, on a good team, he's the fourth outfielder, but we're not talking about a good team. We're talking about the 2017 White Sox. So he's probably going to play center field, and if he doesn't hit leadoff, he's going to hit ninth. So he's going to score runs either way.
Yeah, Tilson is a guy that, like usually when we talk about prospects, we talk about guys who may not have the immediate impact, but we're projecting and going, okay, in 2 to 3 years or in 4 to 5 years, this guy could be a stud. Like, Charlie Tilson is the opposite. This is the year to have Charlie Tilson. Mm-hmm. Going forward, not so much.
Yeah, and I'm glad you pointed that out because that's abnormal for prospect development for sure. But I think on a better team, which the White Sox aren't, he doesn't have as big a role as he does now. Mm-hmm. So, and I think he's the runaway option for center field because that organization right now is pretty bleak in that aspect. So,
yeah, agreed. What about guys that are farther away but have some upside?
I took some shit on this guy. Okay, we'll get to Collins in a minute. Collins is the better player than this guy, but I'm so excited to talk about Hanson. I want to talk about Alec Hanson. I took shit from the guys over at Razzball because my ranking for Hanson was really, really high. And I think it should be. I mean, he was a kid out of University of Oklahoma. He had rumors to go first overall in the draft this year. But, I mean, he's always had the command problems. He ended up slipping to the second round because he'll walk the building if you let him. But, I mean, in his pro debut this year, 54 innings, 24 hits allowed, 81 strikeouts. I'll take that.
Mm-hmm.
I think the stuff is elite. I think if I had time, which we don't in this podcast, I would read you an A.J. Puck scouting report and an Alec Hanson scouting report. They're identical. And whether how highly you think of Puck or not, I guess that kind of skews this, but I think they are exactly the same pitcher. Puck's left-handed, Hanson's right-handed. Mm-hmm. Hanson's control is a smidge worse, but he also strikes out more guys. Fastball is 99 miles an hour with run. It's a bullshit, no bullshit pitch. He's a big stocky dude. Durability will not be a problem. Slider and curveball are both plus pitches. He struggles to repeat the delivery sometimes. Funky mechanics get in the way. Don Cooper, the development machine the White Sox have for pitchers, which has always been good, regardless of what their team has been like. Pitching has always been a strong suit for that organization. So I'm buying Hanson wherever I can, and it's not going to cost you that much unless someone listens to me talk a lot and is convinced by me for some reason. But I like Hanson a lot, and I think that's a guy to invest in that's a little bit off the radar. I don't know about you.
I honestly don't know enough about him, so I will take your word on him, and I will go watch some film.
Yeah, and I want to say one thing about him, too. He's never been hurt. So I think that's good.
That is good.
So
I prefer that over guys who have been hurt.
Yes, and they said what's the number one predictor for injuries? Past injuries? Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any of those. So, and I know he's a pitcher, obvious caveat, but, hey, I'm all aboard that. Zach Collins, I guess, is the next guy. The 10th overall pick in the draft for the – no, 6th overall pick. For the White Sox, excuse me, let me say that again. 10th overall pick by the White Sox. Slipped a little bit in the draft. Was supposed to, projected to go a little higher, so he fell to the Sox, and they had to be exact to get him at 10. I thought he would move off catcher when he got drafted and move up faster and potentially make a major league debut later this season, but he's not because they're sticking with him at catcher. They don't really value catcher defense as much as other organizations. I mean, they had AJ Pierzynski back there for years. Tyler Flowers was recently their full-time catcher. Alex Avila, who's probably the best of the three. None of them are really plus defensive players. They don't really value catcher defense, framing, none of that stuff. So I think Collins has a chance to be a catcher for this org, maybe not in others. You know what I mean? So he's going to move really slow because he's a catching prospect now. Yes, he's a college bat, but catchers are really hard to own because you can't quantify everything. You can't qualify pitch calling. You can't qualify pitch framing. We don't have those stats available to us. He's an unathletic, big dude. He's a poor man's – statistically, I think he's a poor man's Joey Votto. And I say that as in, like, you look at Joey Votto's line in A-ball and you look at Collins' line in A-ball. Yes, I know that's the big difference between the two guys, but in overall talent. But the K percentage is the same. Votto obviously walked – Votto walked at a 9% clip. Collins walked at a 21% clip last year. The plate skills are there. I think it's – Collins, I guess a better way to put it, 80% of Votto is probably Yasmani Grandal, and I think that's what Collins can be. You look at a guy, 250, 340, 425 line. I'm really bullish on his offensive profile. It's all power all the way, power and hit tool, no speed, but whatever. So Collins is going to cost you a lot, but I'm not afraid to invest in a catcher. I normally don't like investing in catchers, but I'm all about this one. So,
all right. We're running a little bit long here, so let's move through the next few guys pretty quickly. Any guys you want to touch on?
Well, I like Dane Dunning. He's a back-end starter, probably. Well, mid-rotation starter for me. Got him from the University of Florida. Got him in the Nationals trade with Giolito, 90-95s with a plus sinker, slider, changeup, throws strikes, pounds the zone with three average pitches. Nothing to hate about that profile. Spencer Adams, another pitcher, really big command guy, doesn't light up the strikeout totals. He will not hurt your whip, gets a lot of ground balls. Luis Alexander Basabe is an exciting cat. Got him from the Boston. Speed-power combination. Any other organization, he'd be slam dunk top 5-6 guy, but not here. Power speed, like I said. The hit tool is a question mark because he's so far away, but I'm a believer in it. Jameson Fisher, underrated guy from this year's draft. Line drive machine, 28% in his pro debut. Advanced approach. Stole 13 bags. He's not going to be that type of player. He's a big hitter, doesn't really have a position, but he's 23 years old in A-ball, so take his monster production for what it's worth. Mike Rodolfo, super raw, Dominican kid, big pop. He's been on the prospect circles for a while. Lottery ticket at this point. Monster power, though, so worth knowing. Alex Calls, a power speed dude. He's a draft pick by them this year. He's more of an average across the board skill set, so that's worth a lot. Koji Zangari, power only first base prospect, but big power. And then obviously the Courtney Hawkins is still there. You know what he is. Adam Engel's a speed guy. Jordan Stevens is an underrated arm I really like. Low 90s with the cutter slider, plus curveball. Should be a mid rotation guy. Right now he's about 11 Ks per nine in the minors. I could see him going to about 9.5, and when he gets to the majors, and that's a three starter for me with the profile with the ground balls. There's a lot more guys. I'll cut it off here. A lot of Dominican lottery tickets. The White Sox did a very nice job of getting back into Latin America. They got in trouble in recent years and had a couple guys that skimmed bonuses. Their scouts were taking money off the top from players when they weren't supposed to be. Obviously, that's illegal. They were in jail. So now they kind of got blacklisted out in the Dominican, and they're back now. They're making moves out there. A lot of other guys, we could talk about it on Twitter. I like the system a ton. It's a top three easy for me.
Well, that
that's and they're going to add to it. They're going to add to it when they trade Quintana too. Forget that. They're going to
and Frazier.
And Frazier and potentially Abreu if they want to go that route. So yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, that will wrap us up. Again, you can reach Matt on Twitter at MDTopFWFB. Reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can email the show friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. And like you heard at the top of the show, give us a 5-star review on iTunes and take a screenshot of it or send a copy of it to @FantasyBenefits on Twitter or friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. That will get you entered in to win one of our spots for a listener league or other prizes we're giving away later on in the off season. For Matt and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.